fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get three-pound packs of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $2.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Today is Monday, October 7th, 2024. Good morning to you. I'm Andy Griffin. It's 9 minutes after 9 o'clock and got my good friend Jack Lancaster here.
Good morning, Andrew.
Hi, Jack. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming here.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Being on the show. Later on in the program, in about a half hour or so, Senator Mike Lee is going to join us on the air. So looking forward to talking to the man. He's the man.
He is. Yeah. He's a good one.
Smart guy.
Yeah. So, yeah, very smart guy.
But we'll hold down the fort until then. You asked me a question right before we went on the air. I didn't even have time to answer it.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, it might be an interesting topic. And I'm like, yeah, actually, that is an interesting topic. It's a hypothetical, right? Sort of.
So, well, one of them is hypothetical.
Either Donald Trump is going to win or Kamala Harris is going to win.
Yep.
And your question was, what will life look like 1 year from right now, depending on who wins?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and how will it affect us right here in St. George?
What are you thinking? Let's go. Kamala wins. What if Kamala wins? How will St. George look?
I think because we are a predominantly, red area, conservative, Republican area, I think we might have a bit of a recession locally for a minute until we find out what the new rules are, if that makes sense, or what the bad news really looks like. So I think everybody's going to sit there, stock up on toilet paper at Costco like they've been doing. and then just not do anything, not buy anything big, kind of sit on everything and just wait and see attitude.
Okay. Do you think I would equate what we've been through the last 3 years plus, 3.5 years plus, it not changing a whole lot because Kamala takes over? Because I personally believe other people are pulling the strings anyway. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
Not Biden. And so I don't know that a whole lot will change from what has been. And that's not necessarily a good thing because we've had some struggles.
Right. Well, I feel like if I look at my own life decisions I'm about to make, that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to be making a big one before. I'm not going to tell you what it now. It's purchasing something.
Okay.
But I don't feel like, I'm, timing-wise, it might happen before the election, but I kind of want to bump it until after.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
In case you might need that money.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of sad to think about, but true.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Don't know. I think if Kamala wins, I think interest rates will probably go back up. I think deficit spending will continue to increase. Trump deficit spent a lot too, but I think the problem is the business outlook will be very negative for the rest of the country. I think Wall Street will react negatively.
Which could affect a lot of people's retirement.
And I think you might have I think Putin and the international players are kind of sitting on the sidelines to find out what happens. Because if Kamala wins, I mean, can you imagine a more weak and fickle, or not fickle, but, just feckless leader on the world stage?
I like that word.
Yeah.
Feckless.
Yeah. I can't think of one.
No.
I really.
No, we would be the laughing stock of the world.
We kind of are now in a lot of ways, but it would be, but just continue to be worse, So I certainly not going to discourage Putin at all. Not going to, I don't know.
You know what's weird about the Biden administration, the Biden perception of Biden from the rest of the world? I believe that the story of him being old and senile has overtaken any of the other stuff he's done. I think, whether he was crooked and all this other stuff, with his terrible foreign relations, I think all that has kind of fallen to the wayside. And the story, the overriding story will be history will say, here's an old guy who was senile. He didn't know what he was doing. And that's what I think, and that's how he'll be remembered.
Is what's worse is a guy that's senile that doesn't know what they're doing because they're senile otherwise before they were competent, or is it someone who just is incompetent from the beginning and is not senile?
I would go one step further from incompetent and say crooked. Untrustworthy. A guy who was, if you just look at some of the evidence and some of the things that were.
Well, I'm talking about Kamala.
Talking about Kamala.
Yeah,
okay.
Compared to Kamala, where she's not senile. She's just. You can't make heads or tails of what she's saying half the time. I swear she's making up words to fill time in her interviews.
Like Devin Dixon used to do.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. I apologize. And anyway.
It's kind of an inside joke because we know him personally.
Yeah, yes, we know him very well. But not only that, when you see her ask a specific question, hey, answer this about this, she will not. She will start it with sort of addressing the answer or the question and then going way out over here on something completely unrelated.
Yeah, and so the children of the community are part of the community, and they're in the community, so they're children of the community. Yeah. It's just amazing.
So we need to go beyond that and experience joy and put the past in the past. You're like, wait, but I asked you about the price of gas.
It reminds me of when I was in high school and I was trying to fill up the number of words for an essay. You know?
I never did that, Jay.
Yeah, never did that. That's what it reminds me of, though.
Really?
That's really weird. An adult who obviously has accomplished a lot, but you got to wonder, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It kind of blows my mind. It really does.
All right, so let's go optimism. Let's say Donald Trump is elected in, I think we're down to like 20-something days, right? 29 days or something. How will life be different, or will it be different in St. George
if
he is the new president?
I think, again, locally, our local population who is going to overwhelmingly support him, we're going to have a positive feeling about the future. People will start acting positively, in my opinion. I, for one, will feel like, interest rates are going to start taking it easy because maybe the deficit won't decrease, but I know that, we're going to start having energy prices start come off. He's going to work on interest rates coming off, which means he's going to work on inflation because Kamala's policies are going to do nothing but hurt, but create more inflation.
Yeah,
for sure. And I've gone to her, believe it or not, I've gone to her website and read the policies. Right. And it's really weird because half of the policies, they blame Trump for this and Trump for that and Trump for this. And they don't talk about as much as what they want to do. It's really, even on the website. Hmm. But I think we'll have a more of a positive, I think locally, our businesses may feel more like investing in the future. I don't know about, I think the Californians, a lot of them will be kind of sad. I don't know if they'll feel like coming here to visit, like the parks and stuff. Maybe they will, I think a lot of, like Rush Limbaugh said, I think the people that are going to vote for, the Democrat side are low information voters, a lot of them. Yeah. So they're probably just like, whatever, maybe. I'm making a lot of assumptions.
And I made a statement on Friday, and I'll run it by you now, see what you think. I felt like American voters were smarter than that, that they would see through some of the smoke screen that Kamala Harris is throwing out there. And then we had the dock worker strike, and we had people buying up toilet paper,
mm-hmm.
which 89% of all toilet paper is made in the United States, mm-hmm. which means what to the dock worker? They don't handle toilet paper. Mm-hmm. They never have. They never will.
Right.
Toilet paper is made domestically. And so, I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, in my opinion, the American voter is actually smarter than we're giving them credit for. And then people go out and they empty Costco and Walmart and whoever else of toilet paper. And then I'm like, maybe they're not as smart as I thought, Jack.
I don't know. It's really funny because you on the one hand you think, well, you can't you can't talk to people like they're idiots on a mass scale, but on the other hand, sometimes they act like idiots. It's funny.
It's true.
I think this, if you have to make an assumption, this may be something we could talk to Senator Lee about. But the thing about Senator Lee is he always talks to his constituency like they're as smart as he is, and they don't talk. He doesn't talk down to them like I think a lot of Democrats talk down to their constituency. I really do.
Mike Lee is a very smart man too.
Yes, he is.
You ever talk to him? He's a lawyer by trade originally, and a politician now, but he's very, very intelligent. Mm-hmm. And he loves the Constitution. In fact, he carries a pocket Constitution with him everywhere.
I have a question for him, but right. I don't know if we'll have time to flesh it out.
Okay. But. Okay. Mike Lee is coming up on the program here at, let's see, it's almost 20 after, so about 25 minutes from now, and we'll talk to him. We've got Jack Lancaster on right now. Jack, another hurricane is approaching the Gulf Coast in Florida, the west side of Florida. Yeah. Hurricane Milton has been upgraded to a Category 3 now. We just had Helene that came through and was just massive. And, you know, Florida handled it pretty well, but it went inland a little bit and got North Carolina pretty good.
Right.
And a lot of people are saying, well, it's a climate change thing. It's a climate emergency thing. Warmer waters are making the hurricanes worse. What do you think about that?
Well, how do you define worse? Is it stronger? Is it causing more damage?
Some people say it was worse than Katrina.
Is it more in frequency?
I don't know. Yeah. That's the weird thing. So as they're alleging that the warmer waters, the climate change is making them worse, we actually have had about a third fewer hurricanes this year than we do in a normal year.
The frequency's down.
Way down.
Way down.
Yeah.
Over historical levels.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it causing more damage? Well, in actual dollars, yes. But in actual dollars compared to GDP of the United States and inflation and everything, no.
No.
Because there's a lot more stuff in the way of hurricanes now.
Yeah, that's true.
If you compare to a hurricane that came through in the 1910s in Galveston, Texas, that killed about 10,000 people, right? But the dollar value damage may have been, $5 million or $10 million. And that same hurricane today would be a $2 billion hurricane.
Right.
But it wouldn't kill as many people. And the reason why hurricanes are less deadly now is because people, we know they're coming. We can see them. We can get out of the way.
Right.
And we prepare. But storm or natural storm-related deaths in the world have plummeted down to very small numbers as compared to what they were 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Because we're smarter.
We can get out of the way. We can prepare. We can do things, right? Now, it doesn't mean that all deaths are going to go away. That doesn't happen, especially in a Category 5 storm like the one that came through 2 weeks ago. But the question is, they're getting worse. Well, how do you define worse? Is there more of them? No. Is it causing more damage relative to inflation and GDP from that country from the 1950s or 40s or 30s?
Actually, no.
No. Is it killing more people? No. So how do you define worse? So what is that then? What is the answer? Why are they saying that?
Maybe it's worse because we got to see it all.
Because back in the day when you didn't have mobile cameras and everybody didn't have a phone in their pocket, and all you had to, and all your options was to read about it in the newspaper, 4 or 5 or 7 days later.
It's true.
And maybe got a couple black and white images.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
It's kind of the same thing with, we look at almost anything now, murder rate, is it up? Actually, not really. It's just that we hear about it more. Our traffic, we have some great local Facebook page, St. George, word of mouth, and some of those.
I think motorcycle tragedies and accidents in St. George are way up.
Yeah, but if you relative to number of population, relative to
miles driven, and relative to all this, it's probably within the statistical norms.
Yeah.
And which is funny because we do this to ourselves. So I just think that it's the bigger question to me is, why would a news outlet just blindly report something like that without fact checking their so called sources on these hurricanes and this so-called climate change? Because really what you're going to say is, really what you're saying is that you driving around in your car is causing these hurricanes. We want you to feel guilty about putting gasoline in your car. How does that help anybody? We want you to feel guilty about air conditioning your home and when it's hot, or heating your home, or cooking with gas. We want you to feel guilty about, you know, taking a trip to, Europe or Mexico or something, or Hawaii, because of all the carbon emissions. That thing cracks me up. So whenever I get on the airplane, or when I book airplane flights, it says 30% less carbon emissions. Who gives a crap? Why would I book because it's less emissions? It's more money. Yeah. Does anybody book because it's less emissions and it's more money?
I don't.
Who
I don't
does that?
I don't think anybody does. I wouldn't.
You book. No, I don't know about you. I book for price and about convenience.
Yeah.
You know,
price number one.
Number one.
And then if they're similar prices, I want the one maybe with fewer stops.
Well, if it takes me 24 hours to get somewhere and it's half the price, or versus, you know, 5 hours.
Yeah.
I might pay more for 5 hours because that time on at my vacation is worth it.
No, you're right about that.
You know,
you're right about that.
So this kind of stuff drives me nuts.
I wanted to, slightly related to this, but I wanted to talk about the story I read earlier today about a murder rate, and the rate of murders that go unsolved. Oh, there it is. I was looking for the right page. In the 1960s and 70s, 93% of all murders were solved. They caught the bad guy. You know, you think about that. If a guy commits a murder, and there's a 93% chance, better than 9 out of 10 chance you were going to get caught and go to jail for it, that would be a deterrent, right? I mean, you never know what's in the mind of a murderer. But I would think somewhere in the back of their mind, they go, I do this, I'm going to get caught. Did you know the current solved murder rate in the United States right now is below 50%?
Mm.
Less than half of all murders are solved now. Even though we've added all this incredible technology, you know, DNA testing, all this stuff, our solved murder rate keeps going down and down and down. And you think about, well, why is that happening? What's going on here? And
a couple of theories.
Okay.
Well, in the 60s, was it, or 50s?
60s and 70s is when it was 93%.
Yep. Yeah.
Late 60s, early 70s, they did a study, and it was 93%.
Well, maybe it was because people, there was more of a community and everybody knew each other's business more. If a murder, I don't know what the number one cause of murder is. Is it possibly is it a crime of passion where somebody gets mad and it happens? For example, you know, a spouse murders the other spouse.
Yeah, that is far and away the high. Usually the murderer knows the victim, and usually it's a family.
Right, so there's some relationship there going on.
It's a high percent, like 88% or something.
If you have more of a community thing going on, then maybe there's more people that are aware of the situation that led up to it, for example. And now, you know, I think in big city, it's funny. I think you get more of a sense of community in a small town than you do in a big city. I don't know if murder rates are higher in cities. I think they tend to, it feels like they are, again, because of the news bias that we have. For example, you know, you talk about the gang shootings, you know, does that feed into that, you know, where it's random that way, or it seems not random, but it's, you know, you got multiple people in a drive-by, you know, car, and they're just spraying bullets, whatever.
One of the other factors,
yeah,
I thought this was interesting, and I am a gun advocate. I carry a gun. I train. I make sure that my family is protected. But guns have been a big factor. Guns have become so easily attainable. Back in the late 60s, when the study was done, about 60% of murders were committed by gun, which means others, you know, poison, knives, baseball bats, whatever, were more common. Now, better than, like, 83% of all murders are committed by gun now. So it's gone up, 15-20% over that time period. And you would think, okay, it's probably a lot easier to solve a murder that was committed with a knife or a bat or whatever.
Something else.
Than a gun.
Yeah.
Because guns are so, I mean, you don't even have to be that close to a victim to kill them with a gun.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously our culture has decayed enough that life doesn't mean as much as it used to. I was always taught, when my dad gave me a gun when I was, I got a 22 when I was 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, don't ever point an unloaded gun, even a toy gun at anybody. I got in trouble for playing Cowboys and Indians and pointed my toy gun at somebody. I got in trouble.
Uh-huh.
Don't even do that.
No.
So I couldn't play Cowboys and Indians with guns. And then, so I was brought into, you know, that was in, you know, instilled in me at an early age. And then when I got the 22 rifle, I was only allowed to shoot it with supervision until I was 16. And but it was always like, don't kill anything. If we went rabbit hunting or something, we cleaned it out and we ate it. You don't kill something just to kill it.
Yeah.
So I got a respect for life, you know, the value of it. So I think maybe that there's maybe not a lot of that happening. Maybe fathers not being present to teach the young people, you know,
there's no dad in the
things
home, yeah.
going on. I don't know. You know, to me it sounds like, you know, maybe guns are more accessible than they used to be. I think we're a richer society overall. We have more money to do anything and everything, and so therefore things are more overall. I'm not just saying that, you know, a few of us, but I think there's just more stuff and there's more things, and you know, our definition of poverty, the bottom end of it, kind of goes up a little bit. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I would just say that people just don't get taught the lessons of morality as much as they used to.
I would submit to, and I hate to do this because I like video games, but there are video games where you kill
yeah.
other people,
yeah.
Grand Theft Auto 5 being one of those, mm-hmm. and the sanctity of life is not what it used to be, Jack.
Back when we were kids, the Boy Scouts was almost every young man was in the Boy Scouts. I mean,
yeah.
the NRA used to do gun safety programs in schools and high schools, and we just don't do any of that anymore.
No.
None of that.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, more with Jack Lancaster. Today is the anniversary, a somber anniversary of something that happened 1 year ago. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Good morning, 9:34. I'm KDXU. Jack Lancaster is with me today. Good old Jack. I like having Jack around.
Well, thank you.
Jack
used to be around, man.
Used to sell the ads you just listened to. He used to be the guy selling those things.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that anymore.
It's my job.
Yeah. Pretty good at it, huh?
I try. Well, I made a living.
Yeah. Must be good enough to
make the bills.
Yeah. That's
put gas in the tank, went fishing.
Charged up your Tesla. No, you
no,
didn't.
No. No. Can't take the Tesla off-road.
No. Today is the somber anniversary of the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. Imagine, now, I just have a hard time picturing living in Israel and why anybody would want to do that, but yeah. imagine you're at a music festival, there's a band up on a stage, you're dancing and hanging out with friends, and these terrorists come and kill a whole bunch of you and
yeah.
take the rest of you hostage, over
yeah.
200 people hostage. And you don't know at that point whether you're going to live or die. In fact,
yeah.
a lot of hostages have been killed already, and there are still over 100 people that are presumed hostages that they have not been able to do anything about. And it boggles my mind. I talked to Jimmy Keston this morning about it. There are people in our country, in the United States right now, that are telling Israel to back down, to let it go. Don't worry. We need a treaty. Let it go. They forget, I think, there was a treaty in place when Hamas did this attack.
Ask that person, if you're living on the border in Arizona or Texas or even on the other border in the north, and a foreign commando group came over and did the same thing to us, would we be wanting to forget yeah. it by now?
No. Heavens no.
Yeah.
And then Iran, of course, with all Iran with those missile attacks last week. And, I mean, I just feel for Israel, and I am not, you know, everybody's like, well, are you a Jewish sympathizer? I'm a human being sympathizer.
Yeah.
And when you have people,
everyone has the right to live in peace, and Israel, I don't know. They take bad advice from us, those poor guys, and I think they have to, because I think we pull a lot of their purse strings.
Yeah,
but,
that's true.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't blame Israel for what they're doing. They have to defend themselves. And everybody, not everybody, but, you know, there's enough bad players over there. And, again, this can go back to Harris and Biden because, you know, they lifted the sanctions against Iran. They gave them money. Now Iran's got money to feed Hamas and Hezbollah, to feed the rockets and to do all the and the stupid Houthis or whatever those guys are called.
Yeah.
And you know, the place is blown up. And, you know, half of the Arab world over there is – you know, is trying to make peace or has made peace with Israel and the Shiites. They just, man, I don't know what's going on. Here's the thing. When you run a dictatorship and you're a mullah or you're a, you know, Kim Jong-un or somebody like that, you have to have an external enemy to keep your population not focused on how crappy your leadership and your society is. And you can't control the population. Because, for one thing, you want to stay in power, and you have no authority to stay in power more, you know, because your authority doesn't derive from the masses, kind of like we're set up as. Your authority derives from your force, from the barrel of your gun. And fear. These people have to keep their populations in fear, or else there's revolutions right around the corner, and these guys might get dragged to the street by their heels.
Yeah.
Think Mussolini, right? So they have to do this. They have to be constantly at war with someone who's an enemy, and so they'll never be at peace as long as they're a dictatorship. How's that?
No, you're absolutely right. And then to bring it home to the United States, you have people like the Rainbow Coalition carrying around signs and banners saying Israel back down, Israel's committing genocide and everything. Do these people understand, the Rainbow Coalition people, understand that their very lifestyle is against the law to the Hamas,
yeah,
and they would execute them immediately if they were there with them.
Yeah, the only side they're on is bringing down our Western civilization.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. That's the only thing they have in common. So they glean onto that, and then they project what they think is their side's going to be. But they're just useful idiots.
Yeah. Not even useful sometimes.
Well, they're useful to the
useful to them.
To them, yeah.
Yeah. All right, I wanted to spend just 5 minutes on geezers. There's a great article on Intellectual Takeout called "Know Thy Geezer."
Andy, be careful. We have a lot of gray in our
Know Thy Geezer
on our face and on our top of our head.
Hang out with your local old timer and reap the rewards. And no, this is in praise of geezers. Now, not every Sunday, but most Sundays, I have dinner with my dad, who is 89. And our two good friends, Randy and Kay, and they are in their, I think Randy's about to turn 80, but they're up there. And to me, you know, there is some semblance of hearing the same story again. There's some of the, you know, they don't hear as well. They forget things. And yet, when they start talking and they start saying things, it's like, wow. I mean, the knowledge, the feeling you get from being around.
They used to do stuff when they were kids we only dream of.
Yeah.
I mean, they used to get away with stuff you can't even imagine now. Right?
Get away. I don't know if that's a good word for it, get away with stuff. But yeah, I know what you're saying. And they're so wise. And they're so, you know, and I was talking to a guy the other day, and he's in his 20s. And he was going on about something, and I just remember thinking, dude, you don't know nothing about nothing. I'm 58, and I've been where you've been, and I know where you... And then I thought, well, So I talked to my dad. He's 89,
mm-hmm.
and he probably thinks the same thing about me sometimes. I don't know nothing about nothing,
yeah.
because he's
yeah.
been there and done that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but once in a while, if I get with someone, I have my sister's 78, and her favorite... Well, I like to talk to her, but I have to direct the conversation or else it goes back to a certain... She likes to talk about two or three things that are just like in her world.
Yeah.
But sometimes I can direct the conversation where I want it to go and try to pull out stuff like, you know, what was your feeling when we were in going into Vietnam? What happened in your... What was going on in your world back then? You know, did you pay attention to it at the time? You know, yeah. Do you remember the soldiers coming home and getting spat on and getting ridiculed at the airports and things like that?
You can even talk to some of the old, like my dad, about yeah. World War II. What was it like knowing our country at war?
Yeah, I talked to my mother. She's passed. But I said, how did you feel? Did you not feel scared to death that we had one country in Europe and another one in the Pacific that were both fighting us and attacking us? And she goes, yeah. It was incredible. We thought we were fighting for our own survival. You know,
yeah,
and
amazing.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that.
I remember hearing stories of my dad talking about rationing of food and you know, as a kid, my dad was a kid during World War II, and you know, the rationing of candy, of chocolate, like, mm-hmm. they couldn't.
Yeah, ration gasoline, rationing a lot of things,
and it was just, you know, it blew me away. I'm like, I've not known anything like that really in my lifetime. I mean, we had the gas shortages in the 70s, you know, and a few things like that, people buying all the toilet paper or whatever, but nothing like what they went through. And so it's so good to, you know, things like when I was a little kid, polio was still a thing.
Yeah.
People were still getting.
Yeah, I had a school teacher that had polio and limped, you know.
Yeah. One of our presidents.
Yeah.
You know, eventually.
Can you imagine reelecting the same guy four times?
Yeah. Not the current guy, that's for sure.
Well, no, I mean, that back then, it was like a tradition. It wasn't even a constitutional thing, you know, until Roosevelt, you know, got third and, you know, he got elected four times. Of course, he died in his fourth term, but that's when the Congress said, I think we're going to have a constitutional amendment about that. We could have ourselves a dictator here if we're not careful.
Yeah.
Well, of course, a lot of people didn't like Roosevelt by then, too. But, of course, you know, when you're in a war and the country's all on the same side and, you know, like that.
Yeah. Well, Jack, I got to get a commercial in. Mike Lee hasn't called yet, but he's supposed to join us here in just a couple of minutes. So let's take a break.
Send out the waves.
Hopefully, Mike will
give us a call.
Welcome back. 9:47 on KDXU. Mike Lee is with me, Senator representing the state of Utah. Mike, how are you?
Doing great. It's good to be with you as always, Andy.
Yeah, it's been a while, so it's good to have you back on the air. In fact, I was talking with Colby, one of your staff members, saying we need to get Mike on more often, so he has so St. George can hear what he has to say. But again, thanks for coming on. Again, a somber anniversary today. 1 year ago, Hamas, a terrorist, went in and took hostages and killed a bunch of people at a music festival in Israel, and it's kind of a somber day a little bit about when it comes to that, Mike.
No, it really is. I remember 1 year ago today getting the news that fateful, I believe it was a Saturday morning, about this attack. A few weeks later, my wife and I went over to Israel and witnessed firsthand the damage that had been wrought towards some of the communities that had been the immediate recipients of this terrible violence. And, gosh, our thoughts and prayers go out to those people in Israel who are still dealing with this. You know, they've had rocket attacks even within the last few hours raining down on them.
Wow.
And it's time we bring peace to that part of the world.
Is there anything we as citizens here in the state of Utah can do about this? I mean, we feel so helpless.
Yeah, well, I do think it's important to continue to draw attention to the fact that sometimes our own government, at times directly and at times through the United Nations, or through other international entities. There are times when we end up funding some of the very people who carry out these attacks. A lot of the funding that has gone into Gaza, ostensibly for humanitarian purposes, has ended up helping Hamas. And it's time that we stop that. The American people want no part of a fundamentally anti-Semitic effort to destroy people in that part of the world simply because of who they are and what they believe.
Yeah, well said. All right. Now, I understand you are coming to southern Utah. Is that true?
Yeah, I'll be in southern Utah, coming down there later today. I'll be meeting tomorrow with Washington County commissioners. I'll be touring a few business sites, having a roundtable with the Cedar City Chamber of Commerce tomorrow afternoon before I head back up north. But it's always good to get down to southern Utah to visit with people in that part of the state, our most vibrant, rapidly growing population, and some of the best people in the state.
I want to apologize in advance for our weather. We decided to have a second summer here, so when you come to later today, it should be about 98 when you get here, although it does cool down nicely at night, but it's going to be hot.
That's fantastic. It's a reminder of the fact that we're still alive, and I'd rather be too warm than too cold these days. Truth is, a lot more people on Earth die of being too cold than they do of being too hot. So
it's
good to have the warmth down in southern Utah.
Jack Lancaster is co-hosting with me today, and Jack, I know you had a question for the
Senator. Good morning, Senator. How you doing?
Jack, it's good to be with you.
Good to hear from you, buddy. I have a question. It's a little off topic.
Yes, sir.
You're a constitutional a person that likes to go by the Constitution. I remember hearing you and remark when you were working with Senator Cruz that if you were working on a piece of legislation, one of you would say, "Is this constitutional?" And you'd kind of make sure that you're within the confines of that wonderful document. My question is, where in the Constitution does it allow for the federal government to implement a national minimum wage?
Excellent question. The short answer to your question is it's not there.
The only reason that
sort of thing is allowed is because since 1937, the Supreme Court has interpreted one provision of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, the Commerce Clause, which is supposed to give Congress the power to regulate interstate commercial transactions, channels of interstate commerce. They've interpreted that to mean that Congress can regulate anything and everything, that even if it takes place in one state at one time, it doesn't involve an interstate commercial transaction, has a substantial effect on interstate commerce. And once you interpret it that broadly, you can apply it to pretty much anything, including a minimum wage. But look, there are all sorts of reasons, practical reasons and constitutional reasons, why minimum wage laws should not be federal.
Right. I 100% agree. I mean, you know, California can... I don't agree that minimum wage laws are moral, to be honest with you, because
they hurt the poor.
They hurt the young. They hurt the disadvantaged. They hurt people who don't have experience, that need experience. Why does a third person get the right to tell me what my labor is worth? Maybe I want to work for $2 an hour. Maybe it's my choice. Why can't I do that?
No, that's exactly right, and that's why on policy grounds I oppose them. But you know, a state does have the authority to adopt those if it wants to. And if one state wants to say we're not going to allow anyone to work or pay anyone else to work in this state for less than, I don't know, $100 an hour, $1,000 an hour, whatever they deem appropriate, they may do that. That doesn't mean that they'll have good outcomes. In fact, they won't.
Yeah.
It's because more of the same kinds of problems they're ostensibly trying to prevent.
So there's okay, go ahead, Andy.
No, if you let Jack go, he will go and go and go. So we're gonna steer it back to the election coming up. Jack and I played a game, I guess, if you will, earlier in this program. What will life be like 1 year from now if Kamala Harris wins, if Donald Trump wins? Do you have any thoughts on that, Mike?
Oh, look, if Kamala Harris wins, then I would expect to see the Democrats potentially gaining back the House, keeping the Senate, and holding the White House. If they do that, they will be in the process of nuking the filibuster, of packing the Supreme Court, possibly adding D.C., maybe Puerto Rico as states, changing the way states make legislative redistricting decisions, and otherwise enacting legislation designed principally to make sure that they, the Democratic Party, enjoy a more or less permanent, indefinite hegemony on the system. Meaning if they have their way and if their legislative strategy runs to its natural conclusion, we may well be looking at the Democratic Party enjoying something akin to the hegemony enjoyed by the PRI party in Mexico, which dominated Mexican politics for the better part of the last century.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're after here, and that's what they will be accomplishing. By contrast, if it's Trump, you'll see a decentralization of power. I think you'll see government efficiency effort that he's asked Elon Musk to pick up making significant strides, and I hope to see Congress enacting significant reforms designed to make sure that our laws are made by men and women of our own choosing, that is, federal law should be made by Congress, not unelected bureaucrats.
With Donald Trump, it's so weird. Everyone I've talked to that is not going to vote for Trump, they say, I haven't been able to get them to say anything good that Kamala Harris has done or will do. They always say, yeah, but Trump. I mean, that's their answer to almost every question you ask about Kamala Harris. They go, well, I'm not sure, but Trump. I can't vote for him. Why is there such animosity toward a guy who, as far as I could tell, and my life was better while he was president?
Well, look, our higher education, our primary and secondary education establishment, our news media establishment, and our entertainment media establishment are all under the control of radical progressive leftists. So it's not surprising that somebody who's not a radical progressive leftist isn't going to be spoken of highly in our society by a lot of people for whom those establishments, those institutions mean an awful lot. But one thing that I think we should keep in mind is what Kamala Harris's legislative record is, what she did in the United States Senate, because that informs us a lot of what she would do if given greater power as president of the United States. And one of the things that I think Utahns ought to be looking at is what kind of approach would she take to religious freedom? It's important to a lot of people here in the state.
Yeah.
People of all faiths, even people of no faith at all, worry about religious freedom and what happens when you don't have it. Look at legislation she introduced. One of the key focal points of her legislative agenda, as far as I can tell, was a bill called the Do No Harm Act. The Do No Harm Act would effectively gut the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. I don't think Utahns, I don't think Americans generally, but Utahns in particular, want that sort of thing.
No.
And for those, particularly those who claim to care about religious freedom, who are backing Kamala, I have yet to hear a compelling, persuasive, or even satisfactory answer from them about the Do No Harm Act, Kamala Harris's effort to gut religious freedom in America.
Kind of scary, actually.
Yeah.
They start taking away our freedom to worship the way that we want to worship. And, then...
I always thought it was fascinating that during COVID it was okay to have a protest in the street protesting social justice, but you couldn't go to church.
Right, right. and it was also okay to go to an abortion clinic. It was okay in some circumstances to go to a gambling establishment or a nightclub, but you couldn't go to church.
Yeah.
Something's
yeah.
terribly wrong with that,
yeah.
and there's a natural hostility that the radical progressive left has toward religious Americans that I think is really stunning.
And you would add to that, not only couldn't you go to church, but they spoke in such a way to make you afraid to go to church. Oh, you don't want to associate with people and sit on a church bench with someone else who might have COVID, and you're going to get it, or you're going to kill them, or whatever. I mean, they scared us.
That's right, and yet not only. Did they scare us? But they scared us for reasons that were counterproductive, didn't do any good, and probably prolonged and expanded the amount of harm that the virus was able to carry out on our society. Meanwhile, we caused all kinds of other problems. Students fell behind. There were a lot of people who endured mental health challenges they wouldn't have otherwise had to face. And we caused too many problems by listening to a small handful of progressive elites who insisted that the government elixir, the government remedy to all of this, this combination of mandatory vaccination, penalties for those who didn't, lockdowns,
yeah.
and government-funded bailouts to facilitate all of this, they ended up being a huge, huge problem for the American people.
Only got a minute left. I did want to ask you about energy and independence. Are we going to have energy independence if Donald Trump is elected?
Yes, I think that's one of the significant changes that you'll expect to see if Donald Trump is elected, is that we'll be back heading in the direction of energy independence. You know, we've got a lot of energy resources in the United States and a lot here in Utah. Sadly, a lot of that is on federal land. Now, that's fine as long as we can access it, but this administration has made it very difficult to access that. They would prefer, apparently, to, disfavor any carbon-based fuel. And what that really does is it puts an additional load on our demand for petroleum from the Middle East and other parts of the world where people don't like us. And it also puts us in a direction of having to rely increasingly as a percentage of the energy we get on unstable sources of electric power that are non-baseload, things like wind and solar. You know, they've got their place like everything else, but they can't do much when it comes, they can't do anything when it comes to baseload power, which is what we so badly need, especially with the additional demands of data centers and artificial intelligence. We've got to start producing and using our own fossil fuels in this country and do it more aggressively.
All right. You heard it from Mike Lee. Thank you, Senator, for coming on today. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Jack, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for
fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get three-pound packs of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $2.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.